Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Quick Hits Fundraiser. Birthright of Odessa will celebrate its 35th anniversary with a special evening featuring Matthew West from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday at MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome, 6201 East Business I-20. General admission is $50 and faith sponsorship is $500 for four tickets. For event, co-sponsor, or event underwriter information, call 228-3129. The Ellen Newell Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a lecture series, Text and Technology, from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. The lecture will be held by the Reverend Joe Weeks, co-pastor of Connection Christian Church, on how new technologies in the Western world impacted the production of religious texts and shape the religious communities to which they belong. Admission is free. On the net, newellartmuseum.org. Nominate a Girl of Merit. Girls of Merit nominations of girls 11 to 18 years old who have proven themselves exceptional members of the community through their actions, activities, leadership, and positive influence on others are open. Nominations may be submitted by any member of the community, including parents, teachers, counselors, mentors, local leaders, and others. Nominations close March 11th for Odessa Midland. Winners will be announced March 13th. Awards ceremony will take place at the Girls World Expo from noon to 4 p.m. March 28th at the Midland County Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. All winners and their guests receive free admission to the main expo. Audition. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Resident String Quartet has scheduled auditions for Concertmaster and for Principal Violin 2 on February 4th, location to be announced. Application deadline is February 10th. Minimum requirements. Candidates must hold a degree in violin performance, master's degree preferred. For more information, email personnel at mosc.org. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 22nd. Donald Dean, Donnie McDougal Wright, age 93, took her final adventurous journey when she left this world for her heavenly home on January 20th in Midland. Donnie was born October 27, 1926, to Joe and Mary McDougal in Ranger, Texas. Donnie married Jarvis Jarbo Wright in Hobbs. He preceded her in death on July 31, 2006. Donnie was preceded in death by her parents, great-great-granddaughter Adeline Horde, and three sisters, Maggie Brown, Joe Johnson, and Edna Weger. She is survived by her three daughters, Mary Ann Safford of Granbury, Donna K. Rushing and husband Peter of Midland, and Johnny Carroll and husband Don of Jowl. She is also survived by six grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, and three great-great-grandchildren. She is also survived by a man that Donnie has always treated as her son, Rodney Hayes of Kermit. Visitation will be 8 a.m. to noon on Thursday, January 23rd, at Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Funeral services will be held at First Baptist Church at 2 p.m. on Thursday, January 23rd, with the Reverend Dudley Mullins officiating. Burial will immediately follow services at Kermit Cemetery. Condolences may be sent to the family online at www.fs-fp.com. Helen Elizabeth Cooper, age 88, transferred from this life into the loving arms of Jesus on January 7th in Katy, Texas. She was born July 20th, 1931, in Buffalo, Oklahoma, to Dr. Thomas Harold and Gladys Williams. She was married to Jim James Paul Cooper in Odessa on June 21, 1952. Helen was preceded in death by her parents, her sister Louise Triplett, her nieces Kimberly Williams and Sarah Scott, her great-grandson Tristan, and her husband. Helen is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Carla and Mike McGinley of Katy, her son Craig Cooper of Odessa, her 8 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren, her brother and sister-in-law, Dr. Harold and Janice Williams, Jr. of San Antonio, and nieces and nephews. Family visitation will be 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 26th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. The memorial service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Monday, January 27th, at Odessa Tabernacle. If desired, memorials may be made to Odessa Tabernacle or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To sign the guest book, please visit www.sunsetodessa.com. Kathy Fishburne passed away on January 19th. Graveside service will be at 3 p.m. Friday, January 24th, in Llano Cemetery East. Memorial service will follow at 4 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church in Amarillo. To view Kathy's full obituary, please visit www.schoolerfuneralhome.com. Charles Raymond Deacon Charlie Evans, 75, went to be with his God on Saturday, January 18th, surrounded by his wonderful family after a short battle with lung and brain cancer. Deacon Charlie was born August 11, 1944, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He was preceded in death by his mother and father, Reed and Polly Evans of Titusville, Florida, and his brother James R. Evans of Memphis, Tennessee. Deacon Charlie is survived by his wife Carolyn of Lake Ivy, his son Charles B. Buddy Evans and wife Michelle of Odessa, 1 granddaughter and 1 grandson. Also surviving are numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, great-nieces, great-nephews, sisters-in-law, and brothers-in-law. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Deacon Formation Fund of the Diocese of San Angelo. Rosary will be recited on Thursday, January 23rd at 6 p.m. at St. Boniface Catholic Church in Olfin. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Friday, January 24th, also at St. Boniface, followed by burial in St. Boniface Cemetery. Arrangements are with Lang Funeral Home of Ballinger. Guests may register online at ballingerfuneralhome.com. Tamara Renee Graham, 59, of Kerrville, passed from this life on January 18th in Kerrville. Tamara was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to parents Kenneth Ray and Karen Rose Hendricks Murrell. Those left who cherish and honor her memory include her daughters Jaylen Renee Perkins and husband Terry of Kerrville, and Libby Rose Vasquez and husband Matthew of Kerrville, former husband Jay Graham, father Kenneth Murrell of Kerrville, siblings Danny Murrell and wife Lucy of Houston, Stephen Murrell and wife Tricia of Katy, and Kimberly Bramlett and husband Jim of Missouri City, Texas, along with her 3 grandchildren. Visitation will be held at Kerrville Funeral Home on Friday, January 24th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Funeral services will take place at 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 25th, at Trinity Baptist Church in Kerrville, with interment to follow at Garden of Memories Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Kerrville Funeral Home. Clovis Eugene Brown, 70, died Thursday, January 16th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Refugio Miranda Chavira II, 34, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 18th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 12 noon, January 23rd, at Crossroads Church in Odessa. David Newton is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Judge Joe Connolly, 84, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 14th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m., January 31st, at Crescent Park Baptist Church. Burial will be at 1 p.m., February 3rd, at Texas State Cemetery, Austin. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Tracy Lynn Free, 66, of Odessa, died Monday, January 20th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, January 24th, at Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witness. At the request of the Free family, they have opted for cremation services as the alternative means of burial for Mr. Tracy Free. Mr. Burton Cole is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Isela Machuca, 42, of Odessa, died Friday, January 17th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2:30 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, at Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Leonor Valerio, 53, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 16th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. A private cremation will follow. FBI continues to look for Odessa bank robber. The FBI is asking for the public's help in identifying a bank robber. The bank robbery happened January 8th at the BBVA Bank, located at 3809 East 42nd. We are asking for the public's assistance in identifying this unidentified individual. Anyone with information can call our FBI Midland Resident Office at 432-570-0255. Go to tips.fbi.gov or contact Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, 8477. This is FBI El Paso Midland Odessa's first unidentified bank robber in recent years. A previous Odessa American article said the investigation reportedly showed a man entered the bank and presented a note to a teller while showing a handgun. The man exited the bank and left the scene in a white truck with an undisclosed amount of cash. There were no reports of any injuries. The man has been described as a thin white man with light-colored eyes, 6 feet tall and 180 pounds, wearing a black hoodie, glasses, and a surgical mask. OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve LeSueur said the bank robber was also reportedly using oxygen as he was wearing oxygen tubes. The man is reportedly driving a white Dodge Ram pickup. The bed of the truck has a diamond plate auxiliary fuel tank. Low testosterone count. To your good health for Wednesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 69-year-old male in good health, except for a low testosterone count of 109 on a recent test. I am wondering about the benefits and risks of therapy. I have read that injection can lead to very high and then very low counts, but the patch can be potentially dangerous to my spouse. Can you clarify these issues for me? Dr. Roach writes, testosterone is an important hormone for men and women, although men have much higher levels. It has many critical functions. This includes promoting bone and muscle strength and generally favorable effects on blood cholesterol types and levels. Plus, it is necessary for healthy sexual function. Although very high levels of testosterone, such as those taken illegally by athletes, are associated with significant risks, replacement of testosterone in a man with low levels and symptoms of low testosterone has not been shown to be risky, and most evidence suggests an overall benefit from getting the testosterone back into the normal range. There are oral forms, injection and transdermal patch and gel formulations. Early injections showed problems with high levels after the injection followed by low, but there are better formulations to minimize that risk. Most men now prefer the gels or patches, which tend to have pretty consistent levels. Women and children should not handle the medication directly. Your spouse is at low risk if you wash your hands carefully after application and avoid skin contact until it has dried completely, such as by wearing clothing.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, January 19th, 2020. Section E, Culture. Exhibit highlights three turn-of-the-century artists. Odessa. The Ella Noel Art Museum is currently displaying works from Thomas Dewing, Augustus Saugerdins, and Elihu Vedder in an exhibit on loan from the Jean and Graham DeVoe Williford Charitable Trust Collection. Curator Daniel Zeiss said that these artists' works will complement the Sacred Scripts exhibit on display. The exhibit takes viewers through three rooms displaying each artist's work. A couple of years ago, the Ella Noel Art Museum had a Mediterranean exhibit from the Trust with great historical work, Zeiss said. We were wanting to do another historical show. We chose three artists with a lot of work in their trust to create this show. Dewing was known for his paintings that exhibit a moody and dreamlike quality. He was a figure painter who specialized in delicate pictures of women. Dewing is more known for his drawings of women, although he did paint as well, Zeiss said. He is known for his ghostly figures, and his paintings are really something, too. Augustus Saint-Gaudens was primarily a bronze worker, Zeiss said. He did a lot of commissioned pieces like portraits, as well as doing public art pieces. Saint-Gaudens was a famed sculptor who combined naturalism and monumentality in his work and was one of the most influential sculptors of his time. His commissioned work, the Shaw Memorial in Boston, depicts a memorial of Colonel Robert Gould Shaw, leader of the Massachusetts 54th Regiment, during the Battle of Fort Wagner, Zeiss said. Vedder primarily painted landscapes and people, Zeiss said. He made multiple of his works, so the Met and the Brooklyn Museum of Art both have pieces that are displayed at the Ella Noel Art Museum. Vedder was a romantic painter and illustrator, whose paintings are derived from dreams and fantasies. He is known for the murals that he painted in the lobby of the U.S. Library of Congress, according to the Ella Noel Art Museum's website. Oddly enough, they all kind of knew each other, and they all had great careers during the turn of the century, Zeiss said. Vedder also illustrated a book called Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, which will be on display along with his oil paintings. Zeiss said the Ella Noel Art Museum wanted to find a companion exhibit to go along with the Sacred Scripts exhibition. Of course, nothing here is as old as some of the text in the Sacred Scripts, but we wanted another historical show to play off of it, he said. We haven't done a classical work show in a while. The exhibit will be on display until April 5th. Story and photos by J.C. Lewis, Reporter Telegram. Extraordinary characters gather for Texas Folklife Festival. I was one of the early ambassadors of the Texas Folklife Festival that started 48 years ago on the grounds of the Institute of Texan Cultures in San Antonio. It was designed to show off the state's diverse cultural population. Joanne Andera, who began as a bilingual tour guide, now is the director of the festival, a post she has held for 39 years. The festival was all about unique characters getting together in one place, says Joanne, whose office is full of festival memorabilia and photographs. The festival became a family, and participants looked forward to their annual reunion. The Lebanese belly dancers drew a big crowd. So did the crawfish races put on by the Cajuns from Port Arthur, and the storytellers who told outrageous stories, most of them based on their own experiences. Spot Baird, professor of possumology, used to parade around holding a silver platter with a baked possum, sweet potatoes, and various garnishes on it. Possum Queen Daisy Potter accompanied him, dressed in regal attire complete with tiara. They were promoting the annual Yamboree in Gilmer. Cowboy Williams of Chapel Hill was there with his hog dogs, telling about his adventures hunting wild hogs and demonstrating how he calls up his dogs. Bill Brett, former postmaster of Hull, made rope from horsehair and hung out at the back 40 where pioneer crafts were demonstrated. Joanne says Bill brought moonshine to the festival. He called it his fortified vitamin C and offered it so people could taste real moonshine. Joanne went to Bill's funeral. He built his own coffin. When he was depressed or wasn't feeling too good, he'd go lie down in his coffin and just kind of think about the world. At his funeral, he was wrapped in his grandmother's quilt and carried to his final resting place in a horse-drawn carriage. Hondo Crouch of Luckenbach was a popular figure at the festival. He used to dance with the belly dancers. One of the racing crawfish died, and Hondo got a funeral together. They had this huge funeral procession, complete with a couple of nuns, and laid the little crawfish in a burial plot on one of our berms. The festival takes place the first weekend in June. None of the original characters are around anymore, but there are new ones to take their places. Joanne says it was just the best time when all the extraordinary characters were there. They were just wonderful people who had an unusual hobby or talent or love of something. We truly missed them. The festival is preserving the history of these people. I'm very proud of what this event has done. I know people who met at the Folklife Festival and have been married for 40 years. I know friendships made here that have lasted. It's a very unique event. Tumbleweed Smith, columnist. Dive deep into nature as a Texas master naturalist. If you have ever wondered what kind of bird that was you saw in your tree, or that lovely spring wildflower you saw by the road, you might just be one of us. Anyone with curiosity about nature may certainly be interested in becoming a certified Texas Master Naturalist. The statewide Texas Master Naturalist program has more than 11,000 volunteers who enjoy learning and interacting with others who love nature. The Llano Estacado chapter of Texas Master Naturalists, based in Midland, is ready to accept a new class of trainees this month. The qualifications to be a trainee are simple: the willingness to learn and volunteer. To achieve certification, trainees complete 40 hours of instruction, including classroom and field studies on varied topics such as mammals, water resources, reptiles, insects, ecology, geology, and habitats. Trainees are required to volunteer 40 hours per year in activities such as butterfly gardening, dove banding, teaching children about dragonflies, or participating on a bird count team. And finally, trainees are required to complete 8 hours of advanced training, which includes activities such as webinars, conferences, or brown bag talks at Sibley Nature Center. Contrary to popular belief, our West Texas home has plenty of nature to observe and learn about. The local chapter partners with the Sibley Nature Center and the I-20 Wildlife Preserve for volunteer and teaching opportunities. These are two very special natural places in our area. The $130 registration fee covers the full year of training, chapter dues, and the Texas Master Naturalist's comprehensive textbook. Our first class meets at Sibley Nature Center, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. The group will then meet one or two Saturdays a month throughout the spring and early summer to complete training. Email llanoestacadotmn@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at llanoestacadotmn for more information. We hope you will join us to learn more about our surroundings outside and let the adventure begin. Training schedule. Saturday, orientation, land stewardship, Phil Dickerson, Texas Naturalists, Pat Hunter. February 8th, ecosystems, Rebecca Dodge, entomology, Michael Nickel. February 22nd, wetland ecology, Nathan Knowles, plants naturalist, Nathan Taylor. March 14th, mammalogy, Phil Solanik, ranchland management, Katie Hoskins. March 27th, 28th, geology field trip, Cliff Cuffey. April, TBA, to be announced. May 9th, plants naturalist, Nathan Taylor. Volunteers as teachers, Phil Solanik, Tahoka Lake field trip. May 16th, urban ecosystems, Emmy Elmschneider. Water resources, Kelly Cook. June, TBA, to be announced. Mary Ann Dingus, Llano Estacado Chapter of Texas Master Naturalists. Be proactive to prevent weeds from emerging. Now is a great time to start preparing your garden for the weeds that may begin to germinate soon. Think about trying a pre-emergent herbicide to help create a protective layer over your lawn to prevent the early weeds from growing. Early spring, around Valentine's Day, in our area, is the perfect time to apply a pre-emergent. Getting ahead of weeds is one of the best options for weed control. Once weeds' seeds begin to germinate and grow, they are taking necessary water and nutrients from other plants in your garden. If you apply a pre-emergent, you can buy yourself some time from early emerging summer annuals, such as lamb's quarters, common mallow, and pigweed. These are all very aggressive weeds that have developed resistance to post-emergent herbicides, not allowing these weeds to mature and produce more seeds with resistant qualities will help maintain your garden and keep it from getting out of hand and preventing you from enjoying any beauty in your garden in the coming spring and summer. If you want to avoid mechanical methods of removing weeds, remember to apply a pre-emergent to lessen the number of germinating seeds. Any that you may miss, be sure to attack when they are still very small and easier to pull by hand. If you are proactive and prevent the accumulation of weed seeds in your garden, you will be very thankful for the results when your flowers and vegetables do not have to compete for resources and your garden is very clean and happy looking. Jeanette Costanon, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. It's time to prune grapevines, plan new garden, add mulch. It's January, and there is much to do this time of year. Gardening crops, such as onions and asparagus, should be planted soon. Or you can begin planning that new garden. If you have grapevines, it's time to prune and start training the vines. A common mistake made is not pruning hard enough. Heavy pruning gives the best quality grapes and promotes fruiting. You want to cut off as much of the old wood as possible. This will encourage the growth of new wood, which is where the fruit is produced. The seed racks will be in stores soon. Decide what you will need and stock up. Go ahead and buy the seeds you will need in the fall as well. Some of the local big box stores don't have seeds after mid-May, so you need to plan ahead. Seeds can successfully be stored indoors in a dark, cool place. I use shoeboxes in an upper cabinet in my utility room. Mulch is a must now for spring. Mid-March is about when our weeds begin to germinate, and you want to stop the light from reaching those seeds. 4 to 6 inches of mulch is recommended. Remember, you will need to add more during the year as decomposition begins. The cities of Midland and Odessa have free mulch if you want to take advantage of that. If you are starting new spaces, you can begin to mark and lay out the beds. On warm days, you can begin digging and getting those beds ready for planting by adding compost. Visit westtexasgardening.org for the recommended plants for our area. Drive around and look for yards that have winter plants you like. There are plants that have beautiful color and greenery in winter, and you may want to consider them for adding color in your yard for enjoyment next winter. Ornamental grasses are beautiful this time of year, and the picture with this article is a good example of that. Keep watering your lawn and evergreens. In the case of Bermuda grass, the part of the grass you see is dormant, but the roots continue to grow and need water, although less often than in the spring and summer. For further information, call the AgriLife office in Midland at 686-4700. Debbie Rowland, Permian Basin Master Gardeners. Family has trouble accepting parents' move to warmer clime. Dear Abby, my husband and I relocated to a warmer climate a few years ago, putting us more than 1,000 miles away from my adult children. The kids all seem to think this trip was just for fun and continue to ask me to come home. All three of them are busy with their own well-rounded lives, and the last few years we were there, their visits became less frequent and shorter. We are now in a state that is much more economical than our home state, and our health and well-being have greatly improved. How do I let them know, once and for all, that I am home? Loving the Southwest. Dear Loving the Southwest, a way to let them know would be to explain that the move has been a positive experience for you and your husband, so much so that your health has improved. Tell them the added bonus is that your living expenses have gone down, and with them, any stress about finances. Let them know they are welcome to visit when it's convenient for all of you, but do not make it about the fact that when you lived close by, their visits became fewer and shorter, which would be regarded as a guilt trip. If you have other friends and relatives where your children live, it's likely you may be visiting that area occasionally, too. Dear Abby, my husband and I recently gained custody of my younger half-brother after a nasty legal battle with my father and stepmother. While we abhor what led to this, we are delighted my brother is in our home and our lives. With the exception of his parents, so is everyone else in our families. My brother will be coming with us to family gatherings that include my dad and stepmother. Most of the family is not privy to the circumstances that led to this situation, and I'm sure questions will come up. My brother has PTSD from it, and talking about it right now is difficult for him. He's in therapy and receiving help. But how can we dissuade potentially upsetting questions without things being weird? Protective in California. Dear Protective, a way to accomplish it would be to have a private talk with your relatives before these events. Explain what happened and that your brother is receiving help, but is in too much pain right now to answer any questions, which is why you prefer the subject not be mentioned. Dear Abby, I'm responding to not just Mary in the South. The lady whose name is Mary Lou, but is continually called only Mary, even though she prefers being called by her full name, I had the same problem. My name is Mary Ann, but I was constantly called Mary, which I hated. To solve the problem, I combined the names and started writing my name as one word, Mary Ann. Since then, I have never again been called Mary. By the way, when I also had to give the initial of my middle name, because the A was no longer available, I started using B, which is the first letter of my maiden name. Mary Lou should try this, and I hope it is as effective for her as it was for me. Mary Ann in Tennessee. Dear Mary Ann, I'm printing your letter because it included the most frequently mentioned suggestion by other readers, and also because it makes perfect sense. Thank you for sharing. Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. Hello, this is Kay reading the Alpine Avalanche for Thursday, January 16th, 2020. Front page. Writer takes a snapshot of ranching women by Roxanne Hill, staff writer. Alyssa Banta is not only an award-winning photojournalist, but also a writer who enjoys documenting people's lives. Banta has lived in Europe and India, where she was a war photographer for several years around the 9/11 era. She also covered conflicts in Africa, working for several non-governmental organizations and publications. Around 2010, Banta decided to take a completely different path. She went into the real estate business in her hometown of Fort Worth, where she focused on purchasing and renovating historic properties and leasing them. After caring for her ill mother, Banta decided to launch a documentary-style book as seen through the lens of hardworking and tough Texas women. I'm really interested in the study of cultures and the study of people, said Banta. When I was doing war photography, I always said, I'm not a journalist, I'm an anthropologist with a camera. I like capturing and freezing cultures in film, so this was a mix of studies of culture with my art. Banta's book, The Texas Ranch Sisterhood, Portraits of Women Working the Land, documents in words and photos everyday life on a ranch. But more than that, it is an intimate portrait of women as they tackle various aspects of their lives. The book features several Big Bend area ranchers, such as Fawn Keeby of Alpine, Jean Ann Evans Ford of Alpine and Fort Davis, and Ann Dougherty from Marathon. Close friend and editor Sterry Butcher resides in Marfa. Banta exclaimed, I think the Big Bend area is an exquisite part of Texas. What's more is that much of the ranching happens around the borderlands of Texas with huge parcels of land. Banta rode horses alongside the women, listening to their conversations and getting to know them. Ranchers ranged in age from early 30s to late 60s. The average age of a rancher now is close to 70. It's an old, aging profession, and I wanted to be in and among women who were powerful, were able to handle what came at them, were hands-on, and were gracious in doing it. They do this because it's in their blood, said Banta. From worrying about finances and the future of their children to who is going to take over the ranch, the hardworking women showed Banta what real life is like in the ranching world. In addition to ranching, they were holding down the family. They picked up their kids from school and took them on play dates and music lessons, Banta said. She summed it all up by noting, I am a sentimental native Texan. I felt like I needed to get out of here and go and reconnect with Texas, with the land, the animals, the people. Banta will be at Front Street Books in Alpine on Friday, January 17th at 6 p.m. Marathon Chamber, A Buzz for 2020 by Shauna Graves, contributing writer. Marathon Chamber of Commerce welcomed a new slate of officers at its first meeting of the year on January 9th. Held at the community center, more than 20 residents and business owners attended and participated in a roundtable discussion. Marathon Public Library was lining up its panel of speakers for the year, expanding what started as Marathon History Night. The first of this year's speakers features Alan Vannoy, a print artist, bookbinder, and owner of Cow Dog in Alpine. The series kicks off at the library at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, and includes a bookbinding demonstration. Marathon resident and volunteer deputy registrar Rosalinda Crace announced she will set up a table near the post office to register people to vote throughout the year, and if anyone has questions about voting, including absentee and mail-in ballots, to find her in town or email her at rocrase@gmail.com. Voting forms are also available at the library and French Company Grocer. The town's active quilting community invited anyone interested to attend its weekly meetup on Wednesdays from noon to 4 p.m. at the Fellowship Hall. All levels of quilters are welcome. "We encourage everyone to come and learn from each other," said member Jody Freeman. One of Marathon's main events, Fiesta de Noche Buena, will revert to being held the first weekend in December. So as not to compete with Alpine events, the celebration was held the second weekend in December during 2019, but the change caused confusion to longtime attendees. Plus, many area ranches fill up with hunters by the middle of December, making it difficult for the hosts of those ranches to attend this traditional event. The first of many 2020 events, a fish fry fundraiser, will take place Saturday, February 8th at 6 p.m. at the community center. Plates will include fish and all the trimmings, with live music from Justin Trevino. Donations will go toward improvements at Post Park, including a bandstand and kiddie pool repairs. Chamber bylaws dictate officer term limits, and an election was in order. This was the last meeting for Marathon resident Elaine Berg to preside as president, a role she held for 5 years. "On behalf of all of us, Elaine, you have been spectacular," Treasurer Jane Gallo said. Berg thanked everyone for bringing the chamber to life over the past few years and ended the meeting with a reminder. "The chamber is about doing fun things, putting on parties, and celebrating our town," she said. Officers for 2020 include owner of the historic Bloss Payne House, Linda Berenick, as president, Gage Hotel General Manager Carol Peterson as vice president, Marathon resident Kim Klein as secretary, co-owner of Main Street Shop Jane Gallo as treasurer, and Marathon resident Ingrid Murphy as corresponding secretary. Marathon Chamber of Commerce meets quarterly, with the next meeting scheduled for April 9th. Sheriff Urges Security Measures by Gail Diane Yovanovich, managing editor. Villainized in George Orwell's 1949 novel, 1984, at the time futuristic Big Brother is now a reality and has proven to be of great benefit to local law enforcement entities. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson recalled, "When I was in school, in my civics class, everybody was concerned with Big Brother watching everything we do. I didn't want anything to do with Big Brother. But Big Brother is here." Dodson pointed out that large cities were now using cameras on every street corner, but small towns and rural areas don't have the finances for that and rely on help from citizens with outdoor security cameras. He said both the sheriff's office and the Alpine Police Department have solved lots of cases from residents' cameras. While beneficial to law enforcement, security cameras also provide peace of mind for absent homeowners, and can even prevent crimes. One or more cameras can be placed anywhere outside, on the house or garage, on trees, and on fences. And doorbell cameras are also available. If you see someone outside trying to break in, you can call the police. If a burglar comes up to your house and sees your camera, it's too late. You already have his picture, said Dodson. These cameras have no monthly service fees and can be monitored at home or remotely on a smartphone. According to Dodson, doorbell cameras have solved many crimes around the country, especially during the Christmas holidays when porch pirates steal packages. Another option is a home security system. Services like Vivint and SimpliSafe are simple and inexpensive, so a security system is no longer a high-dollar item. Homeowners can purchase these services and get the system up and running themselves. Said Dodson, I want to make sure everyone knows there are solutions and precautions out there. If you can't find them or don't know what to buy, we'll help, and we'll come out and install them. We'll do a safety survey at your house and identify vulnerable areas at your home. The sheriff's office has recently started a program whereby citizens can let local enforcement know that they have surveillance cameras. If a crime occurs in their area, these citizens have volunteered to open up their cameras to law enforcement. With the recent rash of car burglaries in both the county and the city, the sheriff's office and the police department have advised residents to remove valuables and lock their vehicles. It's not so much that they break out windows, they're just checking doors to see which are unlocked. We and the city have both had instances where cash, guns, and other items were stolen out of unlocked cars, said Dodson. He added, people think, well, this is Alpine, nothing will happen. But it does. The fact is, we have people who walk around the streets and check doors. Dodson also recommended safes as another line of defense. Guns, jewelry, important papers, and other valuables can be secured, but the safe must either be bolted down or too heavy to move. I don't care how good your local law enforcement is, we can't guard every house every minute, said Dodson. Security measures give you peace of mind, and cameras give us another tool if something does happen on your property. It can help us get a conviction. Acceptance makes peace and happiness possible. Acceptance is one of the greatest strengths. It is an inner power that protects us from suffering and enables us to give strength to others in their time of need. It's a wonderful example to show in our families, work environments, and circle of friends, because it shows how to be a peaceful person in distressing and challenging circumstances. How can we increase this strength of acceptance so that we can take whatever life throws at us and to transform it into something good? If we have a clear reason for practicing acceptance and appreciate its value, then we can happily accept whatever comes our way. One good reason is that without acceptance, we are vulnerable to losing our peace and happiness. As the Buddhist master and my teacher, Geshe Kelsang Gyatso, writes in the book Bodhisattva Vow, we need to cultivate patience even if we don't have any interest in spiritual development because, without it, we remain vulnerable to anxiety, frustration, and disquiet. That's a good reason. Patience is a peace of mind preservation technique. It's important to know that patient acceptance is not a weakness. In the battle with anger, acceptance is not losing, it's winning. There's no inner strength in following the emotional habit of anger. It is far stronger to train the mind. By gaining a clarity and spaciousness of mind to see the habitual thoughts that cause us suffering, we can begin to change those thoughts. We can then train our mind to transform any difficulty into something good, such as compassion. By recalling that others experience far greater suffering than we do, we can cause our good heart to grow. This compassion is the essence of the Buddhist spiritual path. Gradually, we will possess a fearless heart with the confidence and courage of compassion. This inner strength brings us and others true protection. Through contemplating these things, we can develop a sincere and strong intention to patiently accept and transform life's challenges into spiritual growth. To explore these ideas in greater depth, Universalist Unitarian Church of Midland will host my free public talk, The Power of Intention, 6:30 to 8 p.m. on January 24th at 3301 Neely Avenue. People of all religions and philosophical persuasions are warmly welcomed. Gen Kelsang Minla is an American Buddhist monk and the resident teacher of the Kadampa Meditation Center, Texas, in Dallas. Gen Kelsang Minla, Kadampa Meditation Center, Texas. Calendar, January 17th through 23rd. Today, Teen Advisory Board, 4:30 p.m., Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Teens can earn volunteer hours and help with planning and ordering. Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Texts, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, noelartmuseum.org, on display through February 23rd. Saturday, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 9 a.m., Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue. Free Yoga, 9 a.m., Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland, 3301 Neely Avenue. Bring Mat. Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance Community Day, 10 a.m., Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church, 2400 North Tyler Street. The Singing Women of Texas, 6 p.m., Bellevue Baptist Church, 1710 North Big Spring Street, free. Sunday, What's in the Bible Family Bible Study, 6:30 p.m., Greenwood Baptist Church, 10909 Farm to Market Road, 307. Monday, Gentle Healing Yoga, 5:30 p.m., Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle, free, 575-937-3609. Yoga class for cancer survivors. Tuesday, Permian Basin Buddhists, 7 p.m., Unitarian Universalist Church, 3301 Neely Avenue, meetup.com/Permian-Basin-Buddhists. Wednesday, Party Timers featuring The Art of Storytelling with Sue Roseberry, 11:30 a.m., The Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity, 1412 West Illinois Avenue, $10. Thursday, Family Science Night, Science of the Ages, 6:30 p.m., The Petroleum Museum, 1500 Interstate 20 West, free, pbpetro.org. Text and Technology, The Impact of Technological Advancement on the Production of Religious Texts by Joe Weeks of Connection Christian Church, 6:30 p.m., Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, Odessa, free, noelartmuseum.org. La Hacienda Alumni Support Group, 7 p.m., Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, 553-7220. To include your event on this calendar, please email Rich Lopez at jrlopez@mrt.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 19th, 2020, Section D, Life and Times. Come sail away for a good cause. Aphasia Center of West Texas schedules Love Boat Theme Fundraiser. By Nathaniel Miller, oanews@oaoa.com. West Texas may be landlocked, but that isn't going to stop the Aphasia Center of West Texas from taking people on a cruise around the world. That's because this year's Chocolate Decadence fundraiser theme is Love Boat, A Valentine's Voyage. Based on the hit television show, The Love Boat, and offering people the chance to experience a cruise without leaving home, the nonprofit wanted to do something big for their 15th annual event. "We're pretty excited," Kitty Benek, executive director of the Aphasia Center, said. "We feel very blessed and grateful to the residents of the Permian Basin. This community has rallied around the Aphasia Center." The annual fundraiser is scheduled from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. February 7th at the Midland Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion. The fundraiser brings in about 40% of the center's operating budget, and tables start at $1,500. Individual tickets are $225, and Benek said this year will be the first time couples can purchase a table for two in the Lover's Cove. Those tickets, she added, are $500. "It's exactly 1 week before Valentine's Day, and I can't think of anything better than celebrating early and on the Love Boat," Benek said. Doors open at 6 p.m., and Benek said attendees can expect a cruise ship send-off at 7 p.m. During the event, guests will have the opportunity to visit different areas set up to resemble ports from around the world. Other cruise ship activities scheduled are shuffleboard, a casino, and professional dancers on the dance floor to encourage people to dance. "If they want to just get out there and boogie down, they can do that," she said. There is also a live and silent auction scheduled, as well as a performance from Giancarlo Bernini, a magician who appeared on Penn and Teller Fool Us. Guests are encouraged to dress up or down as they please, just as they would on a cruise ship. Of course, Benek said, there will be food and lots of chocolate. Since it was established in 2003, the center works via membership for people suffering from the after effects of a stroke or traumatic brain injury, and who have lost the ability to speak, write, or read. Benek said the center has partnered with Concho Resources to bring the event to the Permian Basin. "We are proud to endorse the Aphasia Center and support the life-changing services they provide to stroke victims and their families," Tim Leach, chairman and CEO of Concho Resources, said in a news release. Benek said the event is a good time for all, but that it also serves the purpose of giving out information about aphasia and how people are affected by it. "That's why the Aphasia Center is here," she said. "If we weren't here, very few people would know about it." If you go, what? Chocolate Decadence. When? 6 p.m. until 10 p.m., February 7th. Where? Midland Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Cost? Individual tickets start at $225. A special table for two can be purchased at $500, and tables start at $1,500. Tickets can be purchased at www.aphasiawtx.org/chocolate-decadence. Call 432-699-1261 for more information.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-677-5555.